Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Thank you. many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I'm stepping. Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African-American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African-Americans, feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you didn't grow up like I did. Like I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard's going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, "This is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is"? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well, I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
So what are we calling playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim. Like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
to me.
Or always
complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This is what I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm going to stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggers in my head.
Mm-hmm. So to say, like, I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, some black people aren't playing the victim, because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, like we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing a victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or whatever part of life.
Yeah, that's kind of just statistics. I'm going
to
agree with him. I also don't like the term playing the victim, because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we, I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through, I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it, because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you'll be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized, or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. it's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s, like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like, it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like, there are people alive still, like, you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what
it's,
I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon
because of
what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right?
You're
not trying to give me
just
some
respect.
Right? Yeah. I didn't go back. Make sure you know I didn't go to school.
All right, brother.
All right. I'm the historian.
He said basically.
Was my grade showing that much, though, for real?
I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I like kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in.
I'm sorry.
I'm listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you could take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family.
Mm.
Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay, so
give me, rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of help you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something, that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together and, you know, one of them yelled, hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also try to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that this young brother say, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just be, you know, but when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. But I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. Has gone. I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
And welcome to Business Boutique. I'm so excited about today because I get to introduce you to one of my new awesome friends. Her name is Mignon Francois. Don't I just sound fancy saying that? Y'all, Mignon is incredible. She is just a light in this world and bubbling with personality. She makes me seem quiet and very low-key. She is the founder and owner of the Cupcake Collection. She has a location here in Nashville and one in New Orleans, a multi-million dollar business that she literally started from scratch. You're going to love her story and love her even more. Check this out. Hey everyone, and welcome to Business Boutique. I'm so excited because I get to hang out with my very good friend, Mignon Francois. Mignon, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Okay. I'm so excited.
I have talked you up. ever since you did an interview here at our staff meeting, you are just this light. So for anyone that doesn't know your business and what you do, let's just start with a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I am a stay-at-home mom turned baking prodigy of some sort, where I took the last $5 that I had and I gambled on ourselves. And turn that into over $10 million in the last 10 years.
Oh, is that all? Okay. We're going to unpack how she did that. Don't worry. Okay, so let's back up. Okay. Let's back up to the beginning. Mm-hmm. You went through a really low point, mm-hmm. and even as you were telling your story, I so identified with that, not because I've been through something similar myself, but my mom has. Mm-hmm. So my mom found herself newly single at 33 with a six-month-old baby mm-hmm. and $64 to her name. She mm-hmm. had a little bit more money than you did, and trying to figure out, how do I turn this money into a life? How do I turn this money into something that we can survive on, mm-hmm. besides just food this week, something beyond that. Uh-huh. And she bought supplies mm-hmm. and went and made cakes and then sold them the next day and turned that money mm-hmm. into what is now her bakery 35 years later. Yeah. So I loved your story, but let's go back to like how you got to that point mm-hmm. and what was going on in your head, because now you're this great success story, but at that time you didn't know. Mm-hmm. You didn't know what lied ahead. Mm-hmm. You've got babies. How many kids did you have at that point?
At that point I had six
kids. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have seven now. Mm-hmm. And so, and you're broke and you're like, take us back there and what that was like, and what was going through your head in that moment of feeling like you're in survival mode.
Well, we had come to Nashville for a better life.
Right.
And then as soon as we got here, the job that we got here for fell through. Mm-hmm. Last one hired is the first one fired. But I told God when I came to Nashville, God, I want a home for my children. I'm not doing this same thing anymore. I'm not living in apartments for the rest of our lives. I want a yard for them to play and a fence and rooms that they can call their own. And so almost a year to the date, we moved out of that apartment into what would become our forever home. But it wasn't easy and it wasn't cute or simple, right?
Right.
When we got it, my husband, I was married at the time. My husband called me and he said, I found this house, this cute little neighborhood. It reminds me of New Orleans. And he brought me down there to look at the house. And I was like, this is an ugly house. And the place where you're taking me to eat today better be better than
this house.
And so we went and I saw the people coming out of the houses surrounding this little restaurant. And I said, take me back to that house. And we went inside and we were standing with the floorboards around our knees because we had fallen through the floors. It was condemned.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I love it.
And there was a sign outside that said owner financing. And I thought that meant that the owner would just give you the money. Like, I really thought they were giving the house away, but that it was just so bad that nobody really wanted it. And so we called and we were like, you know, we'll take the owner financing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like,
not having any idea what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right, sure.
And he was like, it doesn't work like that. And he's like, people want this house. They want to turn it into restaurants and all kinds of stuff. I'm like, nobody's going to do that.
Right.
And so you should just take my deal. I want owner financing. I don't want to pay you for a year. I don't have any money to give you down, as a matter of fact, because I need every bit of whatever money I'm going to get to renovate this condemned property. And he was like, get your life. Goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
But some time went by, and they actually ended up calling us back and said, hey, you know, are you still interested in the house? You mean the one that everybody's going to buy? Like
right,
all
right.
These people,
people lined up. Yeah, sure.
Want to put restaurants in? Yeah, we're still interested. And so he called us down to talk about working on some other houses for him in exchange for the sweat equity on this house. Now, he's not going to give us any money, but I'm going to give you sweat equity towards the $10,000 you need to buy this house, and then then I'll owner finance it for you. But we didn't have a job.
Right.
Because last one hired is the first one fired. And so it's like, yes, we'll take it.
Yeah.
We didn't know how we were going to eat, though.
Right.
We just believed that God wasn't surprised about this, and that if this was our house, he was going to make a way. And so we showed up with our kids to start renovating that first property that they gave us to work on. And by the end of the 4 weeks that it took us to do it, he had paid us $8,000 in cash for our family to take care of us. When he made it clear he wasn't giving us anything.
Sure.
So it's like when you follow in obedience what God tells you to do, he's responsible for the outcome. And that's the thing that I've learned over the whole process of doing the Cupcake Collection. And any story that I hear, all these women begin to come and tell me about how they want to start. And that has been my life's work now, Christy, to do what it is. I believe that I want to show other women what they can do if they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm using my mouth for. That's using my energy, my time, my gift, my talents for. And so it took us 4 weeks to flip that house for them. And we got the property. We moved into it. It was 2 rooms and a half bathroom. Mm-hmm. And the half bathroom was a toilet and a tub.
Mm-hmm.
My children didn't complain about the fact that we had plywood floors. I mean, they were happy that we were together. And I don't think that they knew that we were broke.
Yeah.
And that's a word that I won't even allow my children to really say,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's something that we don't really use in our family mm-hmm. because broken has nothing to do with the money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they didn't know that we were broke.
Yeah.
We didn't have any money, and our situation was dire.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I were going through a time where, you know, the economy was tanking, and one of the biggest things that makes marriages fail is finance.
That's right.
And so we didn't have any.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have much work either.
Right.
And so I prayed, and I said, God, give me something mm-hmm. that I can do to help my husband make ends meet. Because to me, he looked like death. And when you're really close to someone, as you are when you have a spouse, you can read them.
Right.
You know, like I could see it underneath his skin.
Yeah.
Like he looked like death to me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that he wasn't dying. He was dying to me.
Mm.
That our relationship was dying
mm-hmm.
And that God was resurrecting something new in me. Now, I'm not an advocate for divorce,
sure.
you know, in any kind of way, but everybody has to want to work for it, right?
Right.
And so when you find yourself in a position where after 21 years of marriage, my husband says, I want a divorce.
Mm.
And even in that, we still opened the Cupcake Collection together
mm-hmm.
because it was like, what do I have?
Right.
I have nothing.
Yeah.
I have taken care of your children.
Right.
My life has been you.
Right.
And our home. Now what am I supposed to do? I had a degree, you know.
Right.
And I had used my life to raise our family.
Yeah.
What about me?
Right. Right.
And so he said, I'll stay with you to open this business. Mm. And that's something most people don't know. We knew when we opened that business together that he was staying long enough to get me on
wow.
my feet.
Wow.
And so even through that, we sort of mended ourselves back together for a time, but it just,
sure.
you know, it just didn't end up working out. But what we did was I heard God say, make cupcakes. When I asked God, I was trying to help him.
Right.
I didn't know that God was going to turn around and use it to help me.
Right.
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 And so I was listening to Dave Ramsey
every
day. I grew up in a household where we listened to NPR,
uh-huh.
you know,
yeah.
and on the way to school every morning with our mom, we would hear the rest of the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
We would listen for the rest of the story. And I was kind of looking for something like
sure.
that when I discovered Dave Ramsey.
Sure.
And I heard the first time I stopped on the radio station, I heard them screaming, we're debt free.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I got so much joy on the inside of me. I wanted that.
Yeah, sure.
And I was like, turning up the radio, what are they saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And what are they talking about? And they were going off the air. And I was like, what was that?
Yeah.
And I was panting for some of that because my mother had raised us to be debt-free. I mean,
yeah.
she taught me financial responsibility. She taught me that the borrower was slave to the lender. And I remember having my first credit card when I was 15 and getting punished because I couldn't pay the bill out completely when the bill came in. So not only did she take my credit card, she took everything I purchased with it, and she took my paychecks until they were paid.
Wow.
So I understood what it meant
sure.
to lose my stuff, and mm-hmm. I never wanted to lose my stuff again.
Yeah.
But here we were. I was listening to him, and I was waking up every morning at 3:17. And what I want people to know is sometimes when you get up in the morning, it is that you're turning off the stove or you want to check the doors. For me, I wanted to make sure my children were breathing.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
a lot of moms feel that way.
Yeah.
And I turned on the TV one morning because I couldn't go back to sleep, and Wayne Dyer was on the TV, and he was saying, the morning breeze has something to tell you.
Mm.
Do not go back to sleep. And I was like, that sounds crazy.
Right.
You're getting off my TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking for my remote. He says it again. And now I'm looking high and low.
Yeah.
And he says, God is trying to talk to you. Mm. And this is the only time you'll be silent. And I was like,
well, that's true. My kids are asleep. This is the only time that it's going to be silent in my house. That's
and
valid.
I was like, I can relate to that because
yeah, okay.
I know God.
That's
right. And so I sit down and listen. He says, the thing you're getting up every morning for, that's not what it is.
Mm.
And I was like, whoa,
he's speaking to me. That's right. I love it.
And so he said, you know, now that you know that you're getting up for a purpose to hear God, it's going to be hard. Took me about a week after following his instructions to put my feet on the floor and show up in my living room one morning at 3:17 with the Lord. God, I'm here. What are we doing?
Yeah.
I don't really know how to hear you. I really don't know what you sound like. And if you come in here right now, God, please don't, because I'm
scared out of my mind. That's right.
Right. I don't want you to show up, but I really kind of want you to show
That's
up.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And so I did what the only thing I knew how to do. I saw my Bible sitting under the coffee table and I grabbed it and I opened it to wherever it would fall. And it fell on chapter 3 of this particular book. And I ran down the 17 and I got my first word from the Lord.
Wow.
And I began to search feverishly then through the Bible
right.
in every chapter 3 that there was and every verse 17. And I
wow.
would read on until it didn't apply anymore.
That's right.
Until I read the whole entire Bible that way.
Wow.
And I think it was about 6 weeks that I was, once I knew what I was getting up for, that, you know, I had seen God say, write the vision, make it plain. So I got me a journal. I started writing everything that I was reading. And he began to lay out for me all of the things he wanted me to know, that he loved me, that I was good enough, because I was broken, Christy. Like, I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think that I would ever be able to finish anything because I had really great ideas, but I never would finish them.
Yeah.
I would always start, but I would never finish. I've learned in the process, and God will give you so many things as you go and follow him, and you think what you're getting up every morning to actually effectively make happen is the goal, but God has something else because his ways are not our
That's
ways.
Right.
I know how to start. My ministry is not necessarily in finishing,
right.
but I learned that there was a positive spin on that I could help people get started. In that time, God gave me a plan. And then when he gave me that plan, one of the last verses that he said to me was, I listen, choose life, Mignon. I lay before you life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life. So I realized that I had a responsibility in this. This was the last thing God was going to give me.
Yeah.
This was the last idea that he was going to watch me start and not follow
yeah.
through.
Yeah.
And you know, because even though I'm not a finisher, there's still a way not to leave it on the side
right,
of the road, right?
Right.
Just,
right.
Oh, I'm not
there's
doing that anymore.
There's a stewardship element
yeah.
to this.
Yeah, like
right.
you can package it and give it to somebody else, or you can say this, you can write about it and teach it to someone. I mean,
right.
you're not supposed to just leave things on the side of the road.
Right.
That's kind of like how I was doing it. And I learned at 3:17 in the morning that God had chosen me for something, and he was not playing with me, that this was going to be my life, and I could go to the left, or I could go to the right. And I decided to choose life.
Mm.
And so in choosing life, I heard Dave Ramsey say, you could have a bake sale. And I thought, you could have a bake sale every single day.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know how to bake.
Right.
Not even
minor detail. Whatever. Sure, sure.
Right.
We're going to unpack that. Don't worry.
And he said, but you have these two little girls, and they can. But as we got started, my oldest daughter let me know, hey, Mom, I have a plan, and it really doesn't
it doesn't bother you and these cakes. Hey, I can relate to her. As my mom tried to pull me into the fold, I was like, my dreams don't involve icing. Thank you. I grew up with icing. Yeah.
And she wanted to go back to New Orleans. And so without her, my baby daughter wasn't interested. So now I got to learn how to bake.
Yeah.
We had all these culinary books in the house. My husband was passionate about baking and cooking and food because we're from New Orleans. And so he wouldn't help me. He's like, they got books in there. You know, I was like, fine. I had the secret weapon, my grandmother. Mm. My grandmother would be who the movie The Help would have been made about,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
She left her children at home while she went to take care of another family.
Okay.
And but every day there was food, and every day there was cake. And what I loved about going to my grandmother's house was eating. And I love when grandma would come because there would be food, because my
sure.
mother didn't cook.
Sure, sure.
I mean, she's a great cook, but she's not
right,
happy
right,
about it, right?
Right?
And so I would snap beans with my grandmother. And God says, honor thy father and thy mother that your days may be long on the land. And here's what I realized. Long doesn't always mean time. Long could mean abundant, right? So that it be well
right.
with you. And so I think that God honored all the time that I spent my grandma, because I love that chick. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
I hang with
you
her.
You didn't even know at that time what that was going to
yeah.
how that was going to play out in your life.
I call her on the phone before unlimited long distance.
Right, sure.
And my mom was like, look, 5 minutes. That's
uh-huh,
it. That's
uh-huh.
all I can afford to give you. And we made a deal. If you will make the food, I will wash the dishes, because I hated washing dishes. My mother hates to cook. This
yep.
was when I was 17,
okay.
living at home in New Orleans. And I said, fine. Called my grandmother, told her what we're going to do. She's like, all right, this is what you need to get. Well, here I am. I've learned how to cook long distance with my grandmother
sure.
on the phone. So 17 years later, I need to do something in the kitchen. Who
right.
am I going to call?
That's right.
I'm going to call my grandmother.
That's right.
And I said, grandma, I need to make a cake. She's like, open up your hand. Pick this much flour up, pinch your fingers together, measure to this first line. I mean, that's the way she told me how to do it. Standing there looking at everything my grandmother gave me on a piece of paper, I got my first successful thing that ever baked.
Yeah.
I learned God wanted to create this with me.
Mm.
While I couldn't bake well out of a box even, I mean, you just add the thing
right,
that they
right.
say.
Two eggs is all you need, some oil.
It's going to come out. It doesn't come out for me.
Yeah.
And he was teaching me that I was going to have to depend on him.
Take me back to this season of the Lord is speaking to you at 3:17 in the morning. When did you get the idea? Was it the Dave Ramsey bake sale? You could have a bake sale. Was that when cupcakes entered your mind?
I don't know.
When did it turn into the cupcake idea?
I think it became cupcakes because I was trying to bake cakes, you know,
okay.
and I couldn't decorate them.
Okay.
And I didn't have the skill to do that.
So let's talk about that season right there. Like, you
mm-hmm.
have an idea. You're trying to do something. It's not turning out great.
Yeah.
And you need something to work for you. You need
mm-hmm.
a business. You need a plan. You're trying to provide for your family. Why did you not think, oh, this isn't for me, I should do something else? What made you press through and say, I'm going to figure this thing out, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to follow through, that type of thing? Like, talk me through that, because I think a lot of women watching and listening
mm-hmm.
are facing challenges, and they're having trouble discerning, do I push through this challenge
mm-hmm.
and find a way to make it work?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this just a sign I'm not cut out for this,
yeah.
I should actually do something different? So take me back to that, because that's difficult, I think, sometimes
mm-hmm.
to know the difference.
I think, for me, I really understood when I read that Bible verse, choose life,
mm-hmm.
that I really thought I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought it was over for us. And I was tired of being sick and tired.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to be sick, but then to be sick and to be tired,
right.
that's just drained. And I was drained of not having enough. I heard some rap lyrics.
Oh, let's have it. Bring it. Okay, I'm ready for this. We got Jesus and rap music. You are my kind of girl. Here we go.
I heard this song that has been touted as one of the best rap collaborations of all time. Jay-Z
okay.
and Kanye West.
Okay.
The song is called Otis. And I'm listening to this rap song, and Kanye says, they ain't see me. Because last week, I was in my other bins. This time, I was in my other bins. And I'm like, hold on a second. He has options, and they're luxurious. And I don't have a car.
Right. Right.
You know, and it's just like, why is it that Jay-Z and Beyonce and Kanye and Lil Wayne have all this abundance? Are they more loved by you guys? Like, do they have more of your favor and I don't?
Mm-hmm.
And I started realizing that there was something that was required of mm-hmm. me, and that was work.
Okay.
Because Adam and Eve, when they went into the garden, mm-hmm. and I discovered Rabbi
Lappin
yep. on your show.
Yep.
And I started following and reading his book, and I learned this concept that they probably had the best digs of all time. I mean, you can't get a better house
right.
than the one that Adam and Eve had.
Right.
But yet work was required of them. God yeah. said, go work.
It is good. That's right. The work is good.
And
right.
I think that that's what I realized, that you think that when an idea comes to you, it should just happen.
Right.
But overnight success takes 10 years.
Yeah.
And there's a reason that it takes 10 years, because you got to learn all of the pieces, and you got to get humble. You got to be grateful for where it is that you've been
yeah.
in order to get more.
Yeah.
And it takes time for that revolution to happen.
Yeah.
And I learned that work was required of
yeah.
me, and I had to do the work.
Okay, so I think this is huge. I want to camp here for a second, because I think it's incredible that you can look at someone that is a famous, a celebrity, rich, name all the things.
Mm-hmm.
But let's even take a different example. Let's say it's not Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's someone in your neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and they're wealthy and
yeah.
they have a lot of money. I think a lot of people would look at that,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Jay-Z or someone in your neighborhood that drives a Benz or whatever, and they would think, well, they just got a lucky break.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have all this help.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have it's family money.
Uh-huh.
And what's amazing to me is you saw that as personal responsibility to respond to the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
to do the work that would be required to reap the fruit that you wanted in your life, where so many people are stuck, and they've been stuck, Mignon, for
mm-hmm.
5, 10, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I don't know why I'm stuck. Well, everybody else just has it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else fill in the blank. And they
mm-hmm.
take a victim mentality. And if you have a victim mentality, you will get victim results.
Exactly.
And I love that you saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And someone as elevated as Beyonce and Jay-Z, which are so removed from you and I in real life, and you didn't see that as, well, of course, they're famous, they're rich, all the things that would be true,
yeah.
they got 16 nannies, whatever, like if I had that, that would be so easy to say, but instead you thought, no, I'm going to do something different, I'm going to do some work required.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is funny, this is a random sidebar here, but recently I put a thing on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
Actually about Beyonce and
mm-hmm.
how much she practiced
yeah.
and worked. Like she rehearsed
8 hours.
Hours. Months.
Eight months.
Eight months for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people like, oh, that's so encouraging. And there were a couple of people like, well, yes, yeah, she has lots of help and she's not a great example. And I'm like, there's anybody that you can find fault with
yeah.
or you can learn from.
Yeah.
And there are people that you can pull their work ethic. You can, you know, if someone's rocking it at their marriage,
mm-hmm.
I want to go learn from them. And yeah. I mean, they're perfect and everything.
Yeah.
I may not go to Beyonce to teach me about Jesus. That's fine. But I can learn from her work ethic, right? Like you can learn something from everyone. If someone's rocking it in an area of their life in business, I'm going to
mm-hmm.
go learn business from those people that are rocking it. And I just love that that was your takeaway.
Yeah.
I just want to commend you. Like that is... that was your takeaway in that moment where it would have been so easy to be like, well, that's them, not that's not me.
Yeah. Well,
you know what I mean?
Here's one of the things that I know is that Jesus taught in parables because they were relatable.
Right.
That you could remember a story. And so that's why it works to tell my story or to tell other people your story, because they can see themselves in it.
Right.
Well, here's the aha moment I had the other day.
Okay.
Rap songs are modern day parables.
Mm.
It's just who is delivering it.
Right.
What is the message?
Right.
Because God can use a donkey.
That's right.
To
that's
speak
right.
to you.
That's right. And he has.
And he has.
Right.
And he will. And so it's like, what are you listening to?
Mm.
My mother told us that we were great. I mean, she was the biggest cheerleader. So I think that I always had this greatness living on the inside of me. And when I was a little girl, I knew I was going to be famous. Like, I don't want that to sound arrogant or
anything,
but, like, I always knew I was going to be famous. I didn't know what it was going to be for. But this is why. Because I believe that God didn't waste my fabulous name on nobody knowing
that
it.
That is a fact. That name needs to be in lights. It's a great name.
I was like, this is a fabulous name, and people need to know it. So I have to do my due diligence
yeah.
to make my name great.
Yeah.
So all of that was living on the inside of me. And yeah, I didn't just have the example of Beyonce, because remember, I told you about a condemned house that I moved
right,
in.
Right.
But it was in an affluent neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody that was rich was buying up all these properties that people in my community couldn't afford to buy.
Right.
And I was like one of the few that happened to have this blessing fall upon me. God says,
said owner financing is free. I mean, no one else knew that that's what that meant. You took advantage of that opportunity.
But God said, I will open you a window of heaven and pour you out a blessing.
Mm.
That there will not be room for you to receive it. I believe that. And here's the thing. If God is a man that he could not lie, then if we know what the promises are, all we have to do is repeat them back to him. It's just like with your kids. Mommy, you said, mommy.
Oh, they'll tell you what you said.
Oh, yeah, they
will
tell you.
Carter will not let me forget what I said.
But we don't do that to God.
Right, right.
God has told us certain things.
Yeah.
And it's science. It will work for you if you apply it.
Yeah.
And I just got it in my heart. My neighbor across the street was a huge supporter of me. She lived in this big, gigantic mansion, just two of them, her and her husband.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I got all my kids over here.
Right.
We don't have running water half the time. We don't have electricity some of the time. And my kids never went around saying, we don't have anything.
Right, right.
There were many days that they went to school and they had to eat breakfast and lunch at school because our dinner is not sure. We're going to eat. But we were what is more commonly known in Middle Tennessee as the food insecure, meaning that you're going to eat, but you're not sure what.
Right.
You're not sure what time. There were many days we ate at 10 o'clock at night because that's when something was killed to bring home to eat. But they never complained about that. And I feel like I learned at 3:17 in the morning that your reward is based on how you go through the problem.
Mm, that's
that
good.
Your provision
is
based on the way that you travel through the problem. I didn't want the poor me award.
Yeah. Even your attitude with the plywood force. Like, you're, like that, I love that you're talking about that because that matters. I think a lot of people in business or in life, they are in a season of difficulty, small beginnings, unimpressive starts, and they're like, poor me.
Yeah.
I only have 200 followers. Poor me. It's like, if you're not faithful with the 200, God's not going to give you 2 million. So it's like, if you don't have the right heart, the right spirit, the right gratitude, the right humility, the right work ethic with the 200 followers, with your humble beginnings, with your unimpressive, terrible first keynote that you ever did, or your first product, your first cake that just sucked and no one wanted to eat. If you're not faithful with that, he's not going to give you more to be ungrateful and unhappy and joyless about. So I just love your attitude and your spirit through all this because there's such important lessons. I think so often in business we think, oh, I just need the business steps.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you need the character.
Yeah.
You need the steps, but you need the character to carry you through those steps first. And I just love these takeaways that you're like, I didn't want the poor award. I didn't want that mindset.
Because I heard God say at 3:17 in the morning that when you're fasting, I took it from that Bible verse. When you're fasting, don't go around telling people and walking around with a long face. And I thought that probably applies to everything else that you're going through. Like, don't walk around saying,
I'm so pitiful.
Like,
and
nope, everybody has their own challenges. You don't know what those are. But if you can be grateful for where you are, like, you can't get more until you're grateful
for what biblical. It is that
you have.
That's right.
And so I think that was the thing that changed my life because I think I was bitter.
Yeah.
I was a bitter woman, but I learned, I learned this wonderful lesson. As I've been able to go around and speak to people, doors have been open for me. And Dr. Jackson taught me this wonderful concept that none of us know our first name.
What do you mean by that?
And so it's like this, hi, I'm Mignon.
Uh-huh, Christy, nice to meet you.
Hi, Christy. But if you were to say it in a sentence, how would you say it to me? If you're going to introduce yourself to me and I said, hi, I'm Mignon.
Hey, I'm Christy Wright.
I'm Christy Wright. Nice to meet you. There's something similar about my name and your name. We both did the same thing. When I stuck my hand out to introduce you, you said the same thing that I said. And so I learned that on the day that I was born, my parents gave me a gift. That was my name. And that's because they wanted me to individually be recognized as I went throughout the world. And sometimes we're arrogant to believe that we place those names on our children when, in fact, those are funneled to us from the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bible, we see all these examples where God told people to name their children things, and they knew that those names came from the Lord. But now we're so far removed from God that we don't realize that God is still telling us what to name our children.
Yeah.
Otherwise, all Kimberlys wouldn't ask.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And so my parents gave me a name because they wanted me to know who I was and to stand out as an individual. And then they gave me something else. They gave me their name so that I would know whose I was.
That's right.
So when I went into the street, if there was another Mignon, they would be distinguished that this is my Mignon. This is the family that I come from, so that I would know whose I was.
Mm-hmm.
But God also gave me something on the day that I was born. He gave me his name so that I would know that he would never leave me, that he would always be with me, and that is I am.
Mm. I love that.
The word of God says, who do men say that I am?
Mm-hmm.
We're all these, he's all these people.
Yeah.
He's living on the inside of all of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a Bible verse that says, tell them that I am sent you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say I am, I put on the first part of my name.
Oh, I love
that. So
that
I know that all things are possible for me.
That's right.
And when I think about the word impossible, it's just the contraction that says I am possible.
That's right.
That means that there's nothing that's impossible with God.
I love that.
And so God is always with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. And he's given you that promise to carry with you everywhere you go, even when you just speak your name.
Yeah, I've never heard it put that way. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it. I love, because I think so often, Christine Kane talks about this, but so often we understand intellectually God is the creator of the universe and anything is possible with him, and we completely disconnect ourselves from that as that lives in us.
Mm-hmm.
That lives in us all day, every day,
mm-hmm.
that power, that spirit. And so I just love, I am.
Yeah.
I love it. I'll never introduce myself the same way again. You know, I love it. Okay, before we wrap up, I want to talk specifically about belief, because we're talking about that in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things, even as you tell your story, like you believed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you didn't believe in yourself every single second. Maybe you didn't believe in your circumstances, but you always believed in a hope for the future, this
mm-hmm.
idea of choosing life. And I think that when you're in a hopeless situation, when your house is condemned, you're falling through the floors, you don't know how to bake out of a box, and the box that you did bake was not good, you got $5 to your name, like, how do you believe and how do you maintain belief? What keeps you anchored when you're going through those seasons where you don't have any proof around you that the future is good, that God does have a plan for you, that you don't have any signs or indications of how it's going to work out,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're standing
mm-hmm.
in front of the Red Sea
uh-huh.
and God has brought you to this impossible
mm-hmm.
place.
Yeah.
How do you have that faith that carries you through? Let's talk about that.
I've seen him do it.
Mm.
You know, I always love to teach about this. There is a Bible verse, Hebrews 11:1, says that now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And what I love about that is one day I was sitting reading the Bible. Like, you have to know the promises in order to apply them. Like, you know, when you get in your car, you believe that it's going to start.
Right.
You know, I believe that when I go and turn on the light switch, the lights are going to come on. These are things I believe because I've seen them happen. I've seen God perform in my life. I've also seen him perform in other people's lives. And I was like, God, what makes them better than me that you should give them more than you've given me? But I've got 7 children. I know I can't treat them all the same.
Right.
So the Bible says, according to your faith, be it unto you.
Wow.
So the same thing goes for people. You know, mothers could understand this. I can't treat Johnny the way that I treat Ashley, because Ashley wants to stay after school. She wants to be on the cheerleading squad. She wants to join, you know, the 4-H club. She wants to do
right.
all this stuff. So I've got to change my schedule around, do all this stuff for Ashley, because this is what Ashley has worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Johnny just says, Mom, can you make sure that I have snacks because I'm going home?
Right.
Right?
Right.
And all I have to do is make sure that there's a roof over Johnny's head, and Johnny is set and he's over here.
Thank God we all have some Johnnies in the family, right? Like, it's like, mamas are tired. We need a Johnny here and there. That's my Carter. Yeah.
But it's according to Ashley's faith.
That's right.
That as her mom, I have to show up for her.
That's right.
And do the things that she needs me to do as her mother.
That's good.
And I think that that's the way that God is. God says, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and does what? Opens it.
That's right.
Like, the door is not going to be open for you. You must open the door.
Right.
So work is required of us. And I think that that's what I realized, that it wasn't that they were more special than I was. It wasn't that they got a lucky break. It was like, what is the work that they put in? I started asking people, what did you do to get here? Mm-hmm. I began interviewing people like, why is it that you're here? Yeah. What did you do? And I started realizing some of the most successful and wealthy people came from some of the lowest.
I was going to say, I would be willing to bet that when you interview these successful, wealthy people, none of them said, I don't know, it was an accident.
Yeah.
I just woke up here one day on the mountain. No one said that, right? No one said it happened overnight.
Yeah.
It was easy. It was fast. And it was accidental.
Yeah.
No one said that. And we have this myth, because what's amazing is when we completely remove successful people from the work required that got mm-hmm. them there, then it gives us an out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's out of your control, then it's out of my control mm-hmm. for me. I can just sit here and feel sorry for myself. But when you start to see, we live in a world where you reap what you sow.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the parable of the talents. When mm-hmm. you are faithful with a few things, you will be entrusted with many things. And mm-hmm. so I love that, because even as you did research, you start to see there's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And God is a God of patterns.
Yeah.
Like, you start to see
yeah.
this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, work is required.
Yeah.
Dave Ramsey tells a great story that I love. I'm probably going to mess it up, but it's kind of a parable story about how a wealthy man was walking along a road, and he passed this beautiful farm. Like, yeah. imagine a plantation with perfectly manicured fields and the landscaping, and the house was painted, the fence, everything was immaculate.
Mm.
And the farmer was out working the field, and the businessman came along, and he said, oh, wow, farmer, God has blessed you.
Mm-hmm.
God has blessed you with this beautiful, immaculate farm. And the farmer said, yes, he has, and you should have seen what it looked like when he had it to himself. In that, it's like, it's us and God.
Yes.
It's like, God will bless you and
right.
work the field.
Mm-hmm. Hebrews 11:1 says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So if you want things, if you want to activate the heart of God, you got to get on his level.
Yeah.
Because God emptied out heaven for you that you might have life more abundantly or to the full.
Right.
And so if God emptied out heaven for you and you expect to do mediocre things, but then you want God to give you
right,
great and amazing
right.
blessings. It doesn't work that way.
Yep.
But when you activate now faith, you become on the same level of what he invested. Now faith is not having any evidence that what I believe is going to work. Now faith doesn't test it. Now faith doesn't know that when I get in my car, I'm going to turn this thing and it's going to start up and it's going to go. I've seen it happen.
Right.
Faith will allow you to believe in something that you've seen happen before,
yeah.
but now faith doesn't give you any warning.
Mm-hmm.
Now faith just says, hey, I believe that this will work, so I'm going to start doing it right now.
Yeah.
When you activate your now, you activate all you own, which puts you in line with what God said, I invested in you.
Yeah.
I invested everything in you. So now you're investing everything in God, because you're giving him back all that you have, and all that you have is right now. You don't wait to say, well, God, I'm going to wait until you give me the money.
Right.
I'm going to wait until I graduate from college. I'm going to wait until my children grow.
I'm going to wait till I'm ready.
Yeah. There's a study that says that 98% or 95% of Americans are waiting for some big major event to happen before they start living. But this says, I will live right
okay.
now. And when you O-W-N, you're N-O-W, what happens? You W-O-N.
Mm.
And that's what I realized. Mm-hmm. It was about perspective, that when I activate everything I got, God says, okay, now you're serious.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was serious about you, so I gave you everything I had. So give me everything, and then you can start asking me for more. I think that God wants to do more stuff. He wants to give us more stuff.
Right.
But you know what we keep asking him for? Simple things that he's like, I'm not doing that for
yeah.
you. I gave you the ability to tie your shoes, just like the farmer.
Right.
You know, you can you right. imagine what it looked like when
right.
he
right.
had it by himself?
Right.
Like, he gave you the opportunity. He gave you your hands. He gave you a mind. He gave you vision to be able to work something. That's why where there's no vision, people perish.
Because
you can't see
yep.
where you're going. You don't
there's
know
no hope. There's no,
what
yep.
to do with it.
Yep.
But God gave you the ability to tie your shoes, so you don't get to ask him, God, can you tie these shoes for me?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm not doing that.
That's right.
ask me for something
that's
more.
That's right. Try again. I love this theme of how we've even come full circle to faith, because even I did Devo for our company where we do devotional once a week. And in January, a couple years ago, I did this. And I was teaching from Matthew, and I'd never seen this correlation. I'd always seen a cause and effect in scripture of because of your faith, mm-hmm. you've been healed. Because mm-hmm. of your faith, I will bless you. Because of your faith, because of your faith. Mm-hmm. Hebrews, the whole chapter of 11
yeah.
is by faith, by faith, by yeah. faith, Sarah, by faith, Abram, by faith, you know.
Yeah.
And so you start to see this correlation between faith and then God rewards that, God blesses that mm-hmm. and honors that. But in Matthew, there's a story where the disciples couldn't drive out a demon-possessed man, and they came to Jesus. Jesus drives out the demon, and they asked Jesus afterwards, like, hey, why couldn't we do that? And he mm-hmm. said, because you had so little faith.
Yeah.
So there's also the opposite cause mm-hmm. and effect of when we have a lack of faith, like you're saying, when we're mm-hmm. sitting here going, oh, poor me, or God, I don't know if you can do that. Mm-hmm. I'll wait till this circumstance gets changed, and then I'll live my life. God's not going to bless that.
Yeah.
He's not actually going to bless that. Mm-hmm. So I love it. Oh, Mignon, I could talk to you all day. I told y'all. She is a firecracker. I just love your story. I love your heart. I love how Jesus just shines through you, through the words that you share, that through the insights that you have. And you are leading this amazing business that people love the cakes. Like you have refined the recipe. She's these amazing, really cool recipes. We were talking about, what was it, Jack and Coke.
Yeah.
Jack and Coke cupcakes. Who doesn't want one of those? But I remind women all the time, they think there's this separation between business and the marketplace, mm-hmm. a for-profit, you know, secular marketplace mm-hmm. business. And their faith. I'm like, no, God is in your business because mm-hmm. God is in you and you are in your business. And you are such an example of that. Tell people for anyone in Nashville, New Orleans, where they can find the cupcakes.
So we are at thecupcakecollection.com. We're on Twitter as Cupcake Tweets. We're on Facebook and Instagram as The Cupcake Collection. So those are all the places that they can find me. Or if they just want to talk to Mignon, I'm Mignon.Francois on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. Thanks so much for watching. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. And now you can check out this next video.
Hello, everyone. In case you missed our very first event with Lady Lunch Club here in Nashville, we are at the beautiful Omni Hotel at the Kitchen Notes Restaurant, and I'm here with our featured guest, Mignon Francois, who is the founder and CEO of the Cupcake Collection here in Nashville. Mignon is so inspirational, and we are so excited to have her here. I wanted to just ask her a few questions so that we could share a little bit of her spirit here with you in this video in case you missed it, or in case you were here and you just couldn't get enough of it. So I'm just going to ask her a few questions now, and you guys stay tuned and make sure you check us out on our website, ladylunchclub.com, and across the social media platforms, we'll be at Lady Lunch Club. So, Mignon, it is such a pleasure to have you
here. Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful gift.
You are so successful in baking and being a small business owner, but I think there is so much about your spirit, like above and beyond that, that I think the world needs to see.
Aww.
So if you could just share a little bit with us about, you know, in your own eyes, how you see yourself and who you strive to be and kind of what you do to get yourself there.
Okay. So I see myself as famous.
I love it. You are famous. You are.
You know, a lot of people won't be honest with you and just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not intended for it to sound arrogant. It just is what it is.
I love it.
I always knew that I was going to be famous.
Okay.
From a little girl, I would tell my mother that I'm going to be famous one day. And she'd be like, what are you going to be famous for? And I said, I don't know.
I don't know.
And she said, well, just be famous. And so there was just always something on the inside of me that said that people were supposed to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if with this fabulous name, I had to put some due diligence behind it to make it great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed to wake up every day on purpose to do something good. Now, I didn't get to that until I was 33 years old because I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I was good enough. I thought my nose was too big, my lips were too big. I wasn't smart enough. What if I don't say the right thing? What if they don't like me? And so it took for me to, my best friend took some pictures of me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my former life, I was a photographer.
Ooh.
And so she was saying, you always make people feel beautiful. I want to do the same thing for you.
I love it.
So I'm going to put makeup on your face.
Hey, that's a friend for you, right?
I'm going to put makeup on your face, and you just show me where to point that camera and click
mm-hmm.
it. And I didn't think she'd be able to do that. You know, this was before filters. Okay. Before iPhone.
Hashtag no filter.
And she took a picture of me, and the pictures came back untouched, and I was like, wow, that girl is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit with myself and find out that was me.
Wow.
And I just kept saying, that is me.
Yeah.
That is no one else. That is me. And it was in that
time that I began to know the meaning of my name. My name means beautiful.
Wow.
And this is what I've learned over time, that you need to know the meaning of your name, because either you will live out the meaning of your name,
mm-hmm.
or you will live out the purpose of the adversary set up against it.
Wow.
And so I always thought it was ugly, but my name said that I was beautiful.
Right.
And when I saw myself as pretty for the first time, I began to walk in rooms and own them. And I didn't do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It just was, I was pretty enough to walk in the room.
It was
right?
a change in the attitude. And
right. That I could walk, I could set them straight, I could gather myself
uh-huh.
around my clothes, right?
Yeah.
You know, get my attitude.
Yeah.
I have a be attitude.
Yeah.
And when you think about what be attitudes are,
mm-hmm.
I was still meek. I was still humble. And I'm going to always be those things. And even though I'm saying this right now, I'm saying it for the benefit of someone else who doesn't know that about themselves,
mm-hmm.
who needs to know that you're all that.
Right.
It doesn't matter what somebody else has to say about you. And it was in that time that I learned the meaning of my name, and then I began to live out the purpose set up for me. And that's why I could do anything.
Wow.
Because I believed it then.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, when you believe it about yourself, other people will tack on
yeah.
and believe it too.
Exactly.
People will believe whatever they see you doing.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just kind of like, you know how they say the rich get richer
uh-huh.
and the poor get poorer?
Right.
It is, not only is it truth, it's a biblical
mm-hmm.
concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biblical truth. And that which you have, when you use it for whatever little it is that you have,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more.
Right.
Because the currency that's performing for you is the faith that you're putting into
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of people look at that scripture, you know, and think of it in terms of just money. But I think it, you know, expands to all aspects of our lives. Like, you know, that what you have and that you're grateful for and that you, basically what you're working with, if you're actually using it, you know, they say you use it or you lose
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
If you're actually using it, then it grows and it expands for you. And, you know, it does also work in the negative sense as well. It's just like what you focus on will expand and multiply. And so I think that's a really interesting point, you know, to bring up on how, you know, whatever it is that you're focusing on, that you're grateful for, that, you know, that you feel like you have, is going to expand and grow for you.
That's a really powerful point that you said. You get more of what you focus on,
mm-hmm.
whether that be negative or positive.
Exactly.
I had a situation in my team where this really great little girl, captain of the cheerleading squad in high school, she's going to cheer here at Tennessee State University. Gigantic dimples that take over her whole entire face.
Uh-huh.
A smile that looked like I created it on her. But she had attitude problems.
Mm-hmm.
And people were writing me saying, that little girl right there, she does not represent you. And
uh-huh.
I was going to have to let her go.
Yeah.
And I sat her down and said, look, I love you, but I will love you from across,
mm-hmm.
from across the town.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't represent who I am. And so we focused on the negativity of what she was bringing to the table. And girl, there's one more person right there about
like, this is
you
it.
Are going to go. Because I'm so committed to training and raising them in the way that they should go, not just mine, my village.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to give her another opportunity. She had like five opportunities. Like, girl, look, you just don't want to get this. You
have I am
go.
Trying.
You got everybody can sing back up for Beyonce.
You're
okay?
right.
So you only want the best.
Right.
I want the best
mm-hmm.
singing backup
mm-hmm.
for me too.
Exactly.
I'm taking my cues from
love
Queen
it.
Bee, right?
I love it. You can
so,
never get too much Queen Bee.
Right. And so as I was thinking about, I was getting more negativity. We were focused on what she wasn't doing, and I decided one day to wake up and focus on the positive in
mm-hmm.
her. Like, girl, you are too pretty for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, girl, those symbols like that, the world needs to see them. When I focused on that for her, it turned around that
wow.
day.
Yeah.
That day, and so she's still, the other day she had a talk with the manager, and she's like, I just don't understand why people don't get it. And I'm like, really, girl?
She's like, oh, how quickly we forget. That's awesome. Okay, so we know a little bit about you. We can see, you know, I feel like it's purity in the spirit. I love it. I connected with you just right from the start. So what
is next for you? What, you know, exciting things do you have coming up? Where do you see yourself going? Like, what can we anticipate?
Oh, I want to be doing more of telling people what they can do if they believe. I have a really packed schedule in 2018 that's going to take me traveling into the world to spread this joy. I am on a journey to joy.
Yes.
And I have this mission in my life that people who come in contact with Mignon Francois need to leave feeling joy. And if they don't do that, then I have failed at my mission.
Mm-hmm.
But my word for the year is joy and finding joy in the journey, because you can't have a journey without joy.
Yes.
And so it's like we focus on what the first thing we do after we've completed a task is, what did I do wrong so I can next time not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of focusing on what did I do well or what brought me joy. And I'm looking for helping people to find joy. I told you earlier, I want to play hide and seek with joy,
uh-huh,
because can't nobody
exactly.
find her.
Everybody's desperately
seeking her, but nobody can't find her. And I want to be up on purpose about finding joy in 2018. But we just got picked up by the Home Shopping Network.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was so excited. I was watching the video like, yes.
That is a dream come true. Someone asked me if I ever thought that was going to happen to me, and I said, yes.
Did you? I love it. You're like, yeah, I absolutely thought it would.
I didn't know that, you know?
Right.
But like I told you before, like, I knew big things were happening.
Yeah.
I just had to prepare myself. There is a great thought, a thinker of our time that said that a man's opportunity is only as good as what he prepares himself to receive it.
I love it.
And I just always see success as a crash, a really bad crash,
mm-hmm.
at an intersection where there are no survivors except for success.
Mm-hmm.
It's where preparation and opportunity collide.
Yes.
And the only thing rising out of the ashes is success.
Oh, I love
it. And that's really what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2018, I'm doing more of that. I'm going to be a part of the American Dream program that just started on the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
And they said that they believe that I'm one of their next big discoveries.
Yes.
And that was just like,
that is so amazing.
So exciting. And then, you know, just more of nurturing and developing talent for people to be, who are going to come into my footsteps. To whom a lot is given, a lot is required.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my daughter last night, and I was saying, you know, it's hard to be in this place where you just would rather just go find the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find a diamond and polish that up.
Uh-huh.
But diamonds don't look like diamonds. Many people pass them by.
Right.
And I'm looking for diamonds in the rough to polish up, because I want, you know, when I meet my creator, I want him to say, what did you create, Mignon?
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel? What did you do? And I want him to be pleased.
Yes.
So in 2018, I'm doing more of that. But what I'm most excited about is in 2017, we got voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
I believe it. In America, in the world.
So our sweet potato cupcake
represents. Oh, that's my favorite.
Yeah. And so I've opened up a new store in New Orleans.
Awesome.
And I'm going to be opening, you know, more opportunities for people to have franchise opportunities.
Okay.
I'm going to limit it, but yeah. I am going to do a few.
Oh,
that's some
fantastic.
Of my plans.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, now if you had to give some advice to somebody out there who's looking at this, who's watching this, and who said, you know, can I do this?
Oh, the thing I would say to them is, don't try to be like me. You are the best you that there ever will be. And I want you to spend time being more of that. If I could tell people anything that you're looking for, you have it.
Yes.
It's already on the inside of you. I couldn't bake out of a box. And now I'm an award-winning, accomplished pastry chef. They're asking me to create products on shelves, and people are standing in lines to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I'm like, like, is it really? They want to know what I have to say. They want to taste what I've done, and now it's in a place where there's almost nothing I can't bake. You know, nothing I can't make, but I know it's not me.
Yeah.
It's who I allow to work in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're arrogant beings that believe that we come up with anything. But these ideas are strong on the inside of us. I heard, I do a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my reading is done in the car. So I listened to a lot of books, you know, on CD. And I heard a philosopher say that the average American gets 4 good ideas a year, that if they would focus on one of those, they would be a millionaire.
Wow. That's an awesome,
right?
Yeah.
One good God idea.
Yeah. That's all you need. That's all you need. Oh, I love it. So there you have it. Just a little bit of Mignon right here in this little segment for you. But, you know, there's so much more, and I wish we had more time to, you know, to put more content here on this video. But make sure you continue to keep up with her. Follow her, because greatness is following her. So make sure you keep up. And we...
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people. His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education, but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought, an idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them, and in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself. He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate, as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value, and then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell, and subsequently thousands of others, was the obvious fact that each of us is, at this moment, standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar roundtable, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects. That by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, what can I do to increase my service to my customers? He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big shiny car, this average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, I ought to be in his business instead of mine. You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses. There are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures. People do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1 gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. We poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, there lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. That only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12, remember the story of the acres of diamonds. This is Earl Nightingale. Thank you.
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Not long ago, Albert Schweitzer, the great doctor and Nobel Prize winner, was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, Doctor, what's wrong with men today? The great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, men simply don't think. And it's about this that I want to talk with you. We live today in a golden age. This is an era that man has looked forward, dreamed of, and worked toward for thousands of years. But since it's here, we pretty well take it for granted. We in America are particularly fortunate to live in the richest land that ever existed on the face of the earth, a land of abundant opportunity for everyone. But do you know what happens? Let's take 100 men who start even at the age of 25. Do you have any idea what will happen to those men by the time they're 65? These 100 men who all start even at the age of 25 believe they're going to be successful. If you asked any one of these men if he wanted to be a success, he'd tell you that he did. And you'd notice that he was eager toward life, that there was a certain sparkle to his eye, an erectness to his carriage, and life seemed like a pretty interesting adventure to him. But by the time they're 65, One will be rich. Four will be financially independent. Five will still be working. 54 will be broke. Now think a moment. Out of the 100, only five make the grade. Why do so many fail? What has happened to the sparkle that was there when they were 25? What's become of the dreams, the hopes, the plans? And why is there such a large disparity between what these men intended to do and what they actually accomplished? When we say about 5% achieve success, we have to define success. And here's the definition. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. If a man is working toward a predetermined goal and knows where he's going, that man is a success. If he's not doing that, he's a failure. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. Rollo May, the distinguished psychiatrist, wrote a wonderful book called Man's Search for Himself. And in this book, he says, the opposite of courage in our society is not cowardice, it is conformity. And there you have the trouble today. It's conformity. People acting like everyone else, without knowing why, without knowing where they're going. Now think of it. In America right now, there are over 14 million people 65 years of age and over, and about 13 million of these 14 million are broke. They're dependent on someone else for life's necessities. Now, we learn to read by the time we're 7. We learn to make a living by the time we're 25. Usually, by that time, we're not only making a living, we're supporting a family. And yet, by the time we're 65, we haven't learned how to become financially independent in the richest land that has ever been known. Why? We conform. And the trouble is that we're acting like the wrong percentage group, the 95% who don't succeed. Now, why do these people conform? Well, they don't know, really. These people believe that their lives are shaped by circumstances, by things that happen to them, by exterior forces. They're outer-directed people. A survey was made one time that covered a lot of men, working men, and these men were asked this question. Why do you work? Why do you get up in the morning? 19 out of 20 had no idea. If you ask them, they'll say, everyone goes to work in the morning. And that's the reason they do it, because everyone else is doing it. Now let's get back to our definition of success. Who succeeds? The only man who succeeds is the man who is progressively realizing a worthy ideal. He's the man who says, I'm going to become this, and then begins to work toward that goal. I'll tell you who the successful people are. A success is the school teacher who's teaching school because that's what she wanted to do. The success is the woman who's a wife and mother because she wanted to become a wife and mother and is doing a good job of it. The success is the man who runs the corner gas station because that's what he wanted to do. The success is the successful salesman who wants to become a top-notch salesman and grow and build with his organization. A success is anyone who is doing deliberately a predetermined job because that's what he decided to do deliberately. But only 1 out of 20 does that. That's why today there isn't really any competition, unless we make it for ourselves. Instead of competing, all we have to do is create. Now, for 20 years, I looked for the key which would determine what would happen to a human being. Was there a key I wanted to know which would make the future a promise that we could foretell to a large extent? Was there a key that would guarantee a person's becoming successful if he only knew about it and knew how to use it? Well, there is such a key, and I've found it. Have you ever wondered why so many men work so hard and honestly without ever achieving anything in particular, and others don't seem to work hard and yet seem to get everything? They have the magic touch. You've heard them say that about someone. Everything he touches turns to gold. And have you ever noticed that a man who becomes successful tends to continue to become successful? And on the other hand, have you noticed how a man who is a failure tends to continue to fail? It's because of goals. Some of us have them, some don't. People with goals succeed because they know where they're going. Now think of a ship leaving a harbor, and think of it with the complete voyage mapped out and planned. The captain and crew know exactly where it's going and how long it will take. It has a definite goal. 9,999 times out of 10,000, it will get to where it started out to get. Now let's take another ship, just like the first, only let's not put a crew on it, or a captain at the helm. Let's give it no aiming point, no goal, no destination. We just start the engines and let it go. I think you'll agree with me that if it gets out of the harbor at all, it will either sink or wind up on some deserted beach a derelict. It can't go any place because it has no destination and no guidance. It's the same with a human being. Take the salesman, for example. There is no other person in the world today with the future of a good salesman. Selling is the world's highest paid profession, if we're good at it, and if we know where we're going. Every company needs top-notch salesmen, and they reward those men. The sky is the limit for them. But how many can you find? Someone once said, the human race is fixed, not to prevent the strong from winning, but to prevent the weak from losing. The American economy today can be likened to a convoy in time of war. The entire economy is slowed down to protect its weakest link, just as the convoy had to go at the speed that would permit its slowest vessel to remain in formation. That's why it's so easy to make a living today. It takes no particular brains or talent to make a living and support a family today. So we have a plateau of so-called security, if that's what a person's looking for. But we do have to decide how high above this plateau we want to aim for. Now let's get back to the strangest secret in the world, the story that I wanted to tell you today. Why do men with goals succeed in life and men without them fail? Well, let me tell you something which, if you really understand it, will alter your life immediately. If you understand completely what I'm going to tell you from this moment on, your life will never be the same again. You'll suddenly find that good luck just seems to be attracted to you. The things you want just seem to fall in line. And from now on, you won't have the problems, the worries, the gnawing lump of anxiety that perhaps you've experienced before. Doubt, fear, well, they'll be things of the past. Here's the key to success. And the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now let me say that again. We become what we think about. Throughout all history, the great wise men and teachers, philosophers and prophets have disagreed with one another on many different things. It is only on this one point that they are in complete and unanimous agreement. Listen to what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman emperor, said. He said, "A man's life is what his thoughts make of it." Disraeli said this, "Everything comes if a man will only wait. I have brought myself by long meditation to the conviction that a human being with a settled purpose must accomplish it, and that nothing can resist a will that will stake even existence for its fulfillment." Ralph Waldo Emerson said this, "A man is what he thinks about all day long." William James said, "The greatest discovery of my generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind." And he also said, "We need only in cold blood act as if the thing in question were real, and it will become infallibly real by growing into such a connection with our life that it will become real. It will become so knit with habit and emotion that our interest in it will be those which characterize belief." He also said this, "If you only care enough for a result, you will almost certainly attain it. If you wish to be rich, you will be rich. If you wish to be learned, you will be learned. If you wish to be good, you will be good. Only you must then really wish these things, and wish them exclusively, and not wish at the same time 100 other incompatible things just as strongly." In the Bible you read, in Mark 9:23, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." Dr. Norman Vincent Peale said this, "This is one of the greatest laws in the universe. Fervently do I wish I had discovered it as a very young man. It dawned upon me much later in life, and I found it to be one of the greatest, if not my greatest discovery, outside of my relationship to God. And the great law, briefly and simply stated, is that if you think in negative terms, you'll get negative results. If you think in positive terms, you will achieve positive results. That is the simple fact, which is at the basis of an astonishing law of prosperity and success. In three words, believe and succeed." William Shakespeare put it this way, "Our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt." George Bernard Shaw said, "People are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, make them." Well, it's pretty apparent, isn't it? And every person who discovered this for a while believed that he was the first one to work it out. We become what we think about. Now, it stands to reason that a person who's thinking about a concrete and worthwhile goal is going to reach it, because that's what he's thinking about. And we become what we think about. Conversely, the man who has no goal, who doesn't know where he's going, and whose thoughts must therefore be thoughts of confusion and anxiety and fear and worry, becomes what he thinks about. His life becomes one of frustration, fear, anxiety, and worry. And if he thinks about nothing, he becomes nothing. Now, how does it work? Why do we become what we think about? Well, I'll tell you how it works, as far as we know. Now, to do this, I want to tell you about a situation that parallels the human mind. Suppose a farmer has some land, and it's good, fertile land. Now, the land gives the farmer a choice. He may plant in that land whatever he chooses. The land doesn't care. It's up to the farmer to make the decision. Now, remember, we're comparing the human mind with the land, because the mind, like the land, doesn't care what you plant in it. It will return what you plant, but it doesn't care what you plant. Now, let's say that the farmer has two seeds in his hand. One is a seed of corn, the other is nightshade, a deadly poison. He digs two little holes in the earth and he plants both seeds, one corn, the other nightshade. He covers up the holes, waters, and takes care of the land, and what will happen? Invariably, the land will return what is planted. As it's written in the Bible, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Remember, the land doesn't care. It will return poison in just as wonderful abundance as it will corn. So up come the two plants, one corn, one poison. Now, the human mind is far more fertile, far more incredible and mysterious than the land, but it works the same way. It doesn't care what we plant. Success? Failure. A concrete, worthwhile goal? Or confusion, misunderstanding, fear, anxiety, and so on. But what we plant, it will return to us. You see, the human mind is the last great unexplored continent on the earth. It contains riches beyond our wildest dreams. It will return anything we want to plant. Now you might say, well, if that's true, why don't people use their minds more? Well, I think they've figured out an answer to that too. Our mind comes as standard equipment at birth. It's free. And things that are given to us for nothing, we place little value on. Things that we pay money for, we value. The paradox is that exactly the reverse is true. Everything that's really worthwhile in life came to us free. Our mind, our soul, our body, our hopes, our dreams, our ambitions, our intelligence, our love of family and children and friends. All these priceless possessions are free, but the things that cost us money are actually very cheap and can be replaced at any time. A good man can be completely wiped out and make another fortune. He can do that several times. Even if our home burns down, we can rebuild it. But the things we got for nothing, we can never replace. The human mind isn't used merely because we take it for granted. Familiarity breeds contempt. It can do any kind of job we assign to it, but generally speaking, we use it for little jobs instead of big, important ones. Universities have proved that most of us are operating on about 10% of our abilities. Decide now. What is it you want? Plant your goal in your mind. It's the most important decision you'll ever make in your entire life. Do you want to be an outstanding salesman, a better worker at your particular job? Do you want to go places in your company, in your community? All you've got to do is plant that seed in your mind. Care for it. Work steadily toward your goal, and it will become a reality. It not only will, there's no way that it cannot. You see, that is a law, like the laws of Sir Isaac Newton, the laws of gravity. If you get on top of a building and jump off, you'll always go down. You'll never go up. And it's the same with all the other laws of nature. They always work. They're inflexible. Think about your goal in a relaxed, positive way. Picture yourself in your mind's eye as having already achieved this goal. See yourself doing the things you will be doing when you've reached your goal. Ours has been called the phenobarbital age, the age of ulcers and nervous breakdowns. At a time when medical research has raised us to a new plateau of good health and longevity, far too many of us worry ourselves into an early grave trying to cope with things in our own little personal ways, without learning a few great laws that will take care of everything for us. These things we bring on ourselves through our habitual way of thinking. Every one of us is the sum total of his own thoughts. He is where he is because that is exactly where he really wants to be, whether he'll admit that or not. Each of us must live off the fruit of his thoughts in the future, because what you think today and tomorrow, next month and next year, will mold your life and determine your future. You're guided by your mind. I remember one time I was driving through Arizona and I saw one of those giant earth-moving machines roaring along the road at about 35 miles an hour with what looked like 20 tons of dirt in it, a tremendous, incredible machine, and there was a little man perched way up on top with the wheel in his hands guiding it. And as I drove along, I was struck by the similarity of that machine to the human mind. Just suppose you're sitting at the controls of such a vast source of energy. Are you going to sit back and fold your arms and let it run itself into a ditch? Or are you going to keep both hands firmly on the wheel and control and direct this power to a specific, worthwhile purpose? It's up to you. You're in the driver's seat. You see, the very law that gives us success is a two-edged sword. We must control our thinking. The same rule that can lead a man to a life of success, wealth, happiness, and all the things he's ever dreamed of for himself and his family, that very same law can lead him into the gutter. It's all in how he uses it, for good or for bad. This is the strangest secret in the world. Now, why do I say it's strange, and why do I call it a secret? Actually, it isn't a secret at all. It was first promulgated by some of the earliest wise men, and it appears again and again throughout the Bible. But very few people have learned it, understand it. That's why it's strange, and why, for some equally strange reason, it virtually remains a secret. I believe that you could go out and walk down the main street of your town and ask one man after another what the secret of success is, and you probably wouldn't run into one man in a month who could tell you. Now, this information is enormously valuable to us, if we really understand it and apply it. It's valuable to us not only for our own lives, but the lives of those around us, our family, employees, associates, and friends. Life should be an exciting adventure. It should never be a bore. A man should live fully, be alive. He should be glad to get out of bed in the morning. He should be doing a job he likes to do because he does it well. One time I heard Grove Patterson make a speech, the editor-in-chief of the Toledo Daily Blade. And as he concluded his speech, he said something that I've never forgotten. He said something like this: "My years in the newspaper business have convinced me of several things, among them that people are basically good, and that we came from someplace, and we're going someplace. So we should make our time here an exciting adventure. The architect of the universe didn't build a stairway leading nowhere. And the greatest teacher of all, the carpenter from the plains of Galilee, gave us the secret time and time again. As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." I've explained the strangest secret in the world and how it works. Now I want to explain how you can prove to yourself the enormous returns possible in your own life by putting this secret to a practical test. I want you to make a test that will last 30 days. Now, it isn't going to be easy. If you'll give it a good try, it will completely change your life for the better. Back in the 17th century, Sir Isaac Newton, the English mathematician and natural philosopher, gave us some natural laws of physics which apply as much to human beings as they do to the movement of bodies in the universe. Now, one of these laws is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Simply stated, as it applies to you and me, it means we can achieve nothing without paying the price. The results of your 30-day experiment will be in direct proportion to the effort you put forth. To be a doctor, you must pay the price of long years of difficult study. To be successful in selling, and remember that each of us succeeds to the extent of his ability to sell, selling our families on our ideas, selling education in schools, selling our children on the advantages of living the good and honest life, selling our associates and employees on the importance of being exceptional people, to, of course, the profession of selling itself. But to be successful in selling our way to the good life, we must be willing to pay the price. Now, what is that price? Well, it's many things. First, it's understanding emotionally, as well as intellectually, that we literally become what we think about, that we must control our thoughts if we're to control our lives. It's understanding fully that as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Secondly, it's cutting away all the fetters from the mind and permitting it to soar as it was divinely designed to do. It's the realization that your limitations are self-imposed and that the opportunities for you today are enormous beyond belief. It's rising above narrow-minded pettiness and prejudice. Thirdly, to use all your courage to force yourself to think positively on your own problem, to set a definite and clearly defined goal for yourself, to let your marvelous mind think about your goal from all possible angles, to let your imagination speculate freely upon many different possible solutions, to refuse to believe there are any circumstances sufficiently strong to defeat you in the accomplishment of your purpose, to act promptly and decisively when your course is clear, and to keep constantly aware of the fact that you are, at this moment, standing in the middle of your own acre of diamonds, as Russell Conwell used to point out. Fourth, save at least 10% of what you earn. It's also remembering that no matter what your present job, it has enormous possibilities if you're willing to pay the price. Now let's just go over the important points in the price each of us must pay to achieve the wonderful life that can be ours. It is, of course, worth any price. One, you will become what you think about. Two, remember the word imagination. Let your mind soar. Three, courage. Concentrate on your goal every day. Four, save 10% of what you earn. And action. Ideas are worthless unless we act on them. Now I'll try to outline the 30-day test I want you to make. Now keep in mind that you have nothing to lose by making this test and everything you could possibly want to gain. There are two things that may be said of everyone. Each of us wants something, and each of us is afraid of something. I want you to write on a card what it is you want more than anything else. It may be more money. Perhaps you'd like to double your income or make a specific amount of money. It may be a beautiful home. It may be success at your job. It may be a particular position in life. It could be a more harmonious family. Each of us wants something. Write down on your card specifically what it is that you want. Make sure it's a single goal and clearly defined. You needn't show it to anyone, but carry it with you so that you can look at it several times a day. Think about it in a cheerful, relaxed, positive way each morning when you get up, and immediately you have something to work for, something to get out of bed for, something to live for. Look at it every chance you get during the day and just before going to bed at night. As you look at it, remember that you must become what you think about, and since you're thinking about your goal, you realize that soon it will be yours. In fact, it's yours really the moment you write it down and begin to think about it. Look at the abundance all around you as you go about your daily business. You have as much right to this abundance as any other living creature. It's yours for the asking. Now we come to the difficult part. Difficult because it means the formation of what is probably a brand new habit, and new habits are not easily formed. Once formed, however, it'll follow you for the rest of your life. Stop thinking about what it is you fear. Each time a fearful or negative thought comes into your consciousness, replace it with a mental picture of your positive and worthwhile goal. There will come times when you will feel like giving up. It's easier for a human being to think negatively than positively. That's why only 5% is successful. You must begin now to place yourself in that group. For 30 days, you must take control of your mind. It will think only about what you permit it to think. Each day for this 30-day test, do more than you have to do. In addition to maintaining a cheerful, positive outlook, give of yourself more than you've ever done before. Do this knowing that your returns in life must be in direct proportion to what you give. The moment you decide on a goal to work toward, you're immediately a successful person. You're then in that rare and successful category of people who know where they're going. Out of every 100 people, you belong to the top 5. Don't concern yourself too much with how you're going to achieve your goal. Leave that completely to a power greater than yourself. All you have to do is know where you're going. The answers will come to you of their own accord. Remember these words from the Sermon on the Mount, and remember them well. Keep them constantly before you this month of your test. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. It's as marvelous and as simple as that. In fact, it's so simple that in our seemingly complicated world, it's difficult for an adult to understand that all he needs is a purpose and faith. For 30 days, do your best. If you're a salesman, go at it as you've never done before, not in hectic fashion, but with the calm, cheerful assurance that time well spent will give you the abundance in return you deserve and want. No matter what your job, do it as you've never done it before for 30 days. And if you've kept your goal before you every day, you'll wonder and marvel at this new life you've found. Dorothea Brand, outstanding editor and writer, discovered it for herself and tells about it in her fine book, Wake Up and Live. Her entire philosophy is reduced to the words, act as though it were impossible to fail. She made her own test, with sincerity and faith, and her entire life was changed to one of overwhelming success. Now you make your test for 30 full days. Don't start your test until you've made up your mind to stick with it. You see, by being persistent, you're demonstrating faith. Persistence is simply another word for faith. If you didn't have faith, you would never persist. If you should fail during your first 30 days, by that I mean suddenly find yourself overwhelmed by negative thoughts, you've got to start over again from that point and go 30 more days. Gradually, your new habit will form until you find yourself one of that wonderful minority to whom virtually nothing is impossible. Don't forget the card. It's vitally important as you begin this new way of living. On one side of the card, write your goal, whatever it may be. On the other side, write the words we've quoted from the Sermon on the Mount. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Nothing great was ever accomplished without inspiration. See that during these crucial first 30 days, your own inspiration is kept at a peak. Above all, don't worry. Worry brings fear, and fear is crippling. The only thing that can cause you to worry during your test is trying to do it all yourself. Know that all you have to do is hold your goal before you. Everything else will take care of itself. Remember also to keep calm and cheerful. Don't let petty things annoy you and get you off course. Now, since making this test is difficult, some may say, well, why should I bother? Well, look at the alternative. No one wants to be a failure. No one really wants to be a mediocre individual. No one wants a life constantly filled with worry, fear, and frustration. Therefore, remember that you must reap that which you sow. If you sow negative thoughts, your life will be filled with negative things. If you sow positive thoughts, your life will be cheerful, successful, and positive. Now, gradually, you will have a tendency to forget what you've heard on this record. Play it often. Keep reminding yourself of what you must do to form this new habit. Gather your whole family about and listen to what's been said here at regular intervals. You know, most men will tell you that they want to make money without understanding the law. The only people who make money work in the mint. The rest of us must earn money. This is what causes those who keep looking for something for nothing or a free ride to fail in life. The only way to earn money is by providing people with services or products which are needed and useful. We exchange our product or service for the other man's money. Therefore, the law is that our financial return will be in direct proportion to our service. Success is not the result of making money. Making money is the result of success. And success is in direct proportion to our service. Most people have this law backwards. They believe that you're successful if you earn a lot of money. The truth is that you can only earn money after you're successful. It's like the story of the man who sat in front of the stove and said to it, "Give me heat, and then I'll add the wood." How many men and women do you know, or do you suppose there are today, who take the same attitude toward life? There are millions. We've got to put the fuel in before we can expect heat. Likewise, we've got to be of service first before we can expect money. Don't concern yourself with the money. Be of service. Build, work, dream, create. Do this, and you'll find there's no limit to the prosperity and abundance that will come to you. Prosperity is founded upon a law of mutual exchange. Any person who contributes to prosperity must prosper in turn himself. Sometimes the return will not come from those you serve, but it must come to you from someplace, for that is the law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As you go daily through your 30-day test period, remember that your success will always be measured by the quality and quantity of service you render, and money is a yardstick for measuring this service. No man can get rich himself unless he enriches others. There are no exceptions to a law. You can drive down any street in America and from your car estimate the service that's being rendered by the people living on that street. Had you ever thought of this yardstick before? It's interesting. Some, like ministers and priests and other devoted people, measure their returns in the realm of the spiritual, but again, their returns are equal to their service. Once this law is fully understood, any thinking person can tell his own fortune. If he wants more, he must be of more service to those from whom he receives his return. If he wants less, he has only to reduce this service. This is the price you must pay for what you want. If you believe you can enrich yourself by deluding others, you can only end by deluding yourself. It may take some time, but just as surely as you breathe, you'll get back what you put out. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking you can avert this. It's impossible. The prisons and the streets where the lonely walk are filled with people who tried to make new laws just for themselves. We may avoid the laws of man, but there are greater laws that cannot be broken. An outstanding medical doctor recently pointed out 6 steps that will help you realize success. 1, set yourself a definite goal. 2, quit running yourself down. 3, stop thinking of all the reasons why you cannot be successful, and instead, think of all the reasons why you can. 4, trace your attitudes back through your childhood and try to discover where you first got the idea you couldn't be a success, if that's the way you've been thinking. 5, change the image you have of yourself by writing out a description of the person you would like to be. And 6, act the part of the successful person you have decided to become. The doctor who wrote those words is a noted West Coast psychiatrist, David Harold Fink, M.D. Do what all experts since the dawn of recorded history have told you you must do. Pay the price by becoming the person you want to become. It's not nearly as difficult as living unsuccessfully. Make your 30-day test. Then repeat it. Then repeat it again. Each time it will become more a part of you until you'll wonder how you could ever have lived any other way. Live this new way, and the floodgates of abundance will open and pour over you more riches than you may have dreamed existed. Money? Yes, lots of it. But what's more important, you'll have peace. You'll be in that wonderful minority who lead calm, cheerful, successful lives. Start today. You have nothing to lose, but you have a life to win.